when I whet my flashing sword and my hand takes hold on judgment. I will take vengeance upon mine enemies, and I will repay those who hate me. O Lord, raise me to thy right hand and count me among thy saints.
You are now listening to the Alpha Male Buddhist from Brooklyn podcast. I'm your host, Miguel. This is episode 229, and today is April 29th, 2025. Everything you hear on this podcast episode is non-commercial, fair use, Creative Commons license. So yesterday, I was listening to a YouTube channel on the subject of nihilism. I listened to the speaker as he shared his observations on life. The speaker skillfully presented his position on why life is meaningless. As I continued to listen to the speaker, I realized that nihilism is 100% a philosophy of atheism that strives to rationalize living a godless life with a side order of fear and death. People who subscribe to the nihilistic philosophy never consider alternative views on life and choose to subject themselves to living a one-dimensional life, while not realizing that we actually live in a universe of infinite potential. Let me illustrate my point. One day back on December 17, 1903, on the shores of Kitty Hawk, South Carolina, there stood a man on the beach looking up into the sky. As the man looked up, he observed a seagull taking flight, and he immediately experienced a feeling of emptiness and hopelessness because he himself could see the seagull flying and drifting up in the thermals and the wind, and he suddenly had a feeling of emptiness because he himself could not fly. As a result, the man proceeded to return home and reflect on how sad and meaningless his life was because of his inability to fly. At that very moment, a few hundred feet away from him, on the very same beach, stood two brothers, better known today as the Wright brothers. At the very same moment the first man observed the seagull take flight, the Wright brothers also observed the very same bird take flight, and the Wright brothers began to take notes on how exactly the bird achieved flight. And on December 17, 1903, on the beaches of Kitty Hawk, the Wright brothers achieved winged flight. By the way, the Wright brothers were God-fearing Christians. So as a result of these Wright brothers taking notes, that is actually what's referred to as systems or systems thinking. So we're going to get into that. Today, wherever you look, there's an epidemic of depression, drug abuse, and homelessness, with hopelessness served as the main course of the meal. As I listened to one nihilistic speaker after another, I noticed that there was a pattern of self-limiting thinking and never one mention of God or a supreme being. I noticed whenever nihilists speak, they were always speaking about themselves, saying, this is what I think, this is what I feel, and this is what I'm observing. It's almost like they're living life in a vacuum or a void with zero interconnections with the universe and the creation around them, and wondering why they're living such a limited life. And you'll never ever hear them make one self-empowering statement, ever. It is actually a known fact that the greatest feeling anyone can ever have is the feeling of helping another person that's in need. You can actually Google that. That's a fact. I do understand that life is getting harder and harder for most people today, and it's easy to tell people to just pull yourself up by your own bootstraps. That's kind of a boomer view of things. Oh, you can make it. I made it, and you know, I work 20 hours a day, and you can do the same. And this view is not realistic because pretty much the jobs are drying up and life is getting so much harder and everything is getting so much more expensive. And that's the facts of the way things are. But what does that mean? That means that you have to slow everything down into slow motion and break it down into its smallest components. Analyze each piece, as I say, the way they fit together and interlink within one another. Again, systems thinking to find out the best way to find a solution out of this. And I've actually seen people like on YouTube where they live out of their car for 2 years and save up enough money and buy a little mobile home or a little mobile trailer home where they live in, and they live rent free, and they're able to take some trade classes in HVAC or airplane mechanic or diesel. And as smart as AI is right now, AI is not going to fix a diesel engine that broke down. So these are just things to reflect on. Look at the world as a world of possibilities as opposed to a world of suffering and hopelessness. Because if that's your attitude, then you might as well pull the cover over your head, cry yourself back to sleep and just wither away, or hope that somebody is going to come to save you, which is never the case. So let's delve a little bit deeper into this systems thinking subject that we're going to talk about today. I believe at the core of most of the suffering that we see today is people's inability to think for themselves. Today, people are preoccupied with competing with everyone else in order to have some sort of positive self-identity. People are so easy to be tricked into following the proverbial social media leaders, just like little children seeking the approval of their school teacher in grade school. Living a fulfilled life does not mean having lots of money or 1,000 followers on Instagram. Living a fulfilled life is having the knowledge that this demonic system is, as I say, feeding us the cat food and telling us it's steak. To have that understanding and know that's what's taking place. Because if you're being fooled, then you're at ground zero and you're hopeless. You can be in an underprivileged or very difficult situation, but if you have the knowledge of why you're there and possibly find a solution to get out of there and incrementally, slowly building yourself out of it and doing it. Because again, if other people can do it, you can do it. Realizing what your strengths and your weaknesses are and taking the steps and again, systems thinking to get you out of that, to get you where you need to be. And again, not to have lots of money or a big fancy car or whatever, but to be able to maintain a roof over your head that's yours, whether that's in a little trailer home or living out of a minivan or whatever it might be, but just to be able to do that and have the knowledge and know that people are not taking advantage of you. You might be working on a really crappy job at Kentucky Fried Chicken or Wendy's, but you know what? You get on YouTube and you learn a little bit of computer coding or learn whatever trade that, because there's so much out there for you to learn that you do that, and then inch by inch, bit by bit, little by little, you make the right connections, you apply the right strategy, and you're able to change your condition for the better. And again, not that you have lots of money or riches or 1,000 followers on Instagram, but that you are living the fulfilled life that enables you to pick your head up and say, you know what, this is me and this is what I'm doing. And then once you're able to pull yourself up, the ability to help others in that situation. And I don't mean go up to some guy on the corner and give him, $5 to get a hot dog. But what I mean is to really affect change where you can, So that's something to reflect on. That's what it's all about. So now let us get into what I'm talking about here, which is systems thinking, okay? And I'm literally going to read you the Google definition of systems thinking, how it outlines it. And it says here, systems thinking is a holistic approach to understanding and solving complex problems by viewing them as interconnected systems rather than isolated components. It emphasizes the relationship and interactions between elements within a system rather than focusing on individual parts. This approach helps to identify leverage points to change and develop more effective, sustainable solutions. And the key phrase there is relationships and interactions between elements within a system, how things interconnect. That's why I always say you have a problem, you take it apart, look at the components, and then reassemble them. That's systems thinking. So the key principles of systems thinking. Interconnectedness. Everything within a system is linked and influenced by other parts, creating dynamic, causal relationships and feedback loops. Holistic view. Focusing on the whole system rather than individual elements or parts. Understanding relationships. Recognizing and prioritizing the linkages, interactions, and interdependencies between components. Dynamic systems. Acknowledging that systems are consistently evolving and adapting over time. Feedback loops. And this is a big important one. Feedback loops. Understanding how actions and changes within a system can create both reinforcing and balancing effects on other parts. Benefits of using systems thinking. Improved problem solving. Identifying the root cause of complex issues and developing more effective solutions by considering the entire system. Enhanced decision making. Recognizing the potential consequences of decisions on the broader system. Increased innovations. Identifying new opportunities for change and improvement by understanding the dynamics within the system. Better collaboration. Facilitating communications and collaboration between different stakeholders by creating a shared understanding of the system. Long-term sustainability. It's funny, but as I'm reading this, I'm realizing that to a really large degree, like I pretty much lived, like, you know, for, I don't know, from age 14 or 15, 16 on upward, I've kind of employed this kind of system thinking, because I noticed that whenever I had questions on a specific topic, let's say, you know, fixing a car, like if I was with a person and they were working on the car, or a mechanic is looking at my car, I would ask a lot of questions, and how does this affect that, and how did you realize or diagnose this problem? And I was looking at how he was able to utilize systems thinking in whatever he was doing, right? And I also realized very quickly that nothing in itself is independent of anything else. Everything relies to a greater or lesser degree on interconnections with other things, right? So it's important to take this kind of view of it, because if you don't ask questions, you're not going to learn anything. And if you just accept what people tell you, you know, the guy fixes your car and says, oh, it was, you know, your blinker fluid, you know, and you're going to blinker, okay, blinker fluid, you know, like, what a stupid, right? But I've actually heard that said. But if you say to him, hey, what was the issue? And he tells you, oh, your alternator went bad. So, you know, stop charging your battery. And I say, how did you realize that? And he says, well, I start your car up and, you know, I give it a jump start and it's running. And then I disconnect the battery and the car stops running, which means that the alternator is not running the car. And those of you who went to cars know what I mean. You know, I disconnect the battery, the car stops running. That means that the alternator is bad because it's not generating any charge out of the running motor. So obviously, as a result of that happening, your car was running off the battery and the battery died also. So it's not your battery that's bad, really. It's your alternator. So it's the interconnectedness of all things. And you don't only apply that to engineering or car or mechanics, but you also apply that to the philosophical world, right? So if you're a person who's nihilistic in their thinking, and automatically you go to the default position that, you know, life isn't worth living, that everything is turned against you, and what's the whole point of getting up in the morning, because all you're going to do is work day after. Sure, you can always take that view, but that's an extremely one-dimensional view of how to go about living your life, right? It's giving up before you even start, right? It's like you gotta take a grid, like a spreadsheet or a grid, and then, you know, with columns and rows, drop it over whatever problem you have or whatever life you're living or whatever direction you're going in. Drop this grid on top of it and say, these are my pluses, these are my minuses, weaknesses, strengths, where I need to be going, what I need to avoid. You know, it's like growing up. A perfect example, probably at around age 17, you know, I was Brooklyn, New York, downtown, Wyckoff Projects, playing basketball, making my friends, making different friends, and running around. And I fell into kind of a bad crowd. There was this guy named Glenn, big kid, huge kid. He was younger than me, but he was already like, I don't know, 6'2", big. And friends from the basketball court. He was a cool kid at the time, but I noticed that one day, a bunch of the hoodlums, a bunch of the hoods from the area, they were like whistling out to me, yo, Glenn, let's go. We're going to go do this. We're going to go do that. And like Glenn would say, nah, I'm playing ball. I'm doing this and that. But one day, Glenn went with them. He disappeared. And I noticed he wasn't on the basketball court for a few weeks, you know. And I noticed that he was running around with this wrong crowd. I didn't pay it any mind. But I saw Glenn one day and he goes, hey, we're going to Manhattan. We're doing this and that. So he was with a couple of his friends, his cousin, I think. So I went and I hung out with Glenn, you know, and we ran around. And I felt kind of cool because Glenn was kind of a known guy, had a big rep, you know, reputation of being, you know, a hardcore kind of dude, you know, like a real player in the neighborhood, in the projects. He had a known reputation for being, you know, a solid dude. So I was running around with him and his cousins and everything like that. And then actually me and my cousin Greg were hanging out with him and such, right? But I noticed right away that this guy was just up to no good, crime and stuff like that. And I also noticed that he was trying to put me in a position for me to get in trouble or get arrested, because he would say stuff like, you know, I came out one morning and he was standing on the corner, literally on Nevins and Wyckoff in Brooklyn. And I'm like, yo, Glenn, what's up? And it's funny, but his eyes were like not looking at me directly. He was looking off at an angle. And he said to me, he goes, you see building 131, Warren? He's like, a guy just walked in with a bag, like a photography bag or something, I think cameras that he had. He went in through the front. But I want you to go around to the back entrance just in case, you know, like he was scheming on this dude already. And I looked and I says, you know what, that's it with Glenn, man. I'm not hanging out with him anymore. I didn't say anything to him. I was like, cool, you know, I got to do this thing over here right now. And I just left and I never hung out with him again. But I realized from a system standpoint what exactly was going on. And I had to make a choice between trying to be the cool guy with the street cred and all that stuff like that, or going the right way, the right path, where it's more difficult but more fulfilling and more honorable. You know what I mean? And I made my choice right there. And I employed systems thinking, man. You know, like, who is this guy? What is he about? What does he do? And what is my direction? And do the two match? So it's important. It's like critical thinking. But it's so much taken for granted these days, because you'll, again, go on YouTube or whatever social media. And perfect example, I saw a guy on YouTube. And I forget exactly what he was doing, but he walked up. There was like a town square or whatever like that, a plaza with a lot of people hanging out. And he had a bag like from the grocery store. So he opened up the bag, pulled out a gallon of milk, opened it, poured it out on his head, and started running around going, whoa, 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 like, and I'm, you know, and the guy's videotaping him and he puts it on YouTube. Like, what is this guy doing, man? Besides being stupid. First of all, wasting food when people are hungry. Pouring milk on his own head, looking like an idiot. Doing it for views, right? There's nothing to that. And these views are not going to do anything for you. I read a statistic literally yesterday. I think if you get 1 million views on YouTube, that translates to, I think, $250, I think the number is, or whatever it is. Now, advertising and stuff like that and sponsorship, that's separate. But I'm saying from YouTube. So what is it that you're really doing? You know, how are you really making your evaluations and observations of this world from a system standpoint? Are you employing systems, or are you just living your life like a leaf blowing in the wind, you know, that's going to end up wherever the wind takes it? There's a time in life where you have to turn around and start making some of the difficult choices, because the only way that you're going to improve your lot in life is to go through the fire and go through the difficult times and, you know, go through the criticism and understand that whenever people are tossing this negative energy at you, that negative energy that they're projecting onto you is actually the darkness that they have within themselves, and misery loves company, so they're going to project this darkness onto you, right? You don't attach to it. You don't attach to it. You observe it. You identify it. You quantify it. You make an evaluation of it, but you don't attach to it. You don't accept it. You don't acknowledge it. And you have nothing to do with it. You just look at it, identify it, label it, and move on. So this way, next time you see that pattern or that system, you know what it is and you don't waste your time on it, right? And it's very tricky. Very, very tricky these days. This is something that if you don't live a life of discipline and hard work and self-introspection, what are you doing with your life, right? You're living really an infantile life. And that's where the nihilism comes in, because really it almost, when you listen to them, it's almost like you hear a little child like, wah, wah, wah. You know, I went to work and my boss, and there's no meaning in this job because, yeah, whatever, man. The greatest thing that you can do, man, if life is giving you breadcrumbs, right? You take those breadcrumbs and you make a masterful birthday cake with those breadcrumbs, you know? If life is throwing rocks at you, you take those rocks and build a castle with those rocks. Turn them into stones and build a castle, you know? It's the alchemy. I don't mean it in a bad way, but just alchemy in the sense of converting something negative into something positive, you know? And having the understanding of how that's done. Watching people that are where you want to be as far as from a spiritual standpoint, from integrating God in their life. And I don't mean going to a church and tithing half of your money to whatever and the guy's buying jet planes with your money. No, I'm talking about and if you go to church, that's fine. But just make sure you're not getting ripped off and that you're following a good shepherd that's really abiding by the word of God. But what it comes down to really is you having that one-on-one relationship with the Almighty, with God, with Yeshua HaMashiach, the Merciful. And what you're going to find is as you walk on your path with God in front of you at the apex, you're going to find that slowly your life is going to start to change. You're going to get tested. The devil is going to definitely test you. He's going to try to throw you off track. And the way you know that you're on the right path is when stuff really, like everything in a way, starts crumbling and becoming very difficult for you, because that's a sign that you're actually reaching to the point where you need to be, you know? Perfect example, too. One time I was, I forget exactly where I was, but I was trying to get something done and I got a phone call and this happened and another thing happened and whatever, and come to find out, you know, right at that point I got a call from, I think it was Wayfair or some kind of big company, the furniture company, you know, and I got it as an account, but I was noticing that everything was just being stacked up against me, and I was really feeling kind of low at that point, kind of nihilistic, I guess you could say, in a sense. But I could never really understand it in the sense of how you just accept all of that weakness, or how you accept all of them problems and absorb them in and just submit to them, right? Submit and just roll over, you know, on your back and give up your belly and just give up, you know, just tap out. So it's important to, again, to employ the systems thinking and make it a practice of understanding why you are where you are and understanding what steps you need to take to get to remediate that or to move in a direction. And it's by little baby steps, you know, little baby steps. You get into Microsoft Excel and you learn what a column is. You learn what a row is and you learn how to format a field. And then, you know, you learn how to go into Microsoft Paint and to make, you know, for example, when I was in the staffing business, I needed people to drive forklifts. So I would get into Microsoft Paint and I'd cut, copy and paste a picture of a forklift with a guy driving it and saying, you know, $17 an hour, you know, posting them up in Perth Amboy in different areas where I get my forklift drivers from. Learning those little steps and people hating on me, man. Hating on me as we did this. Oh, this looks so whatever, and why did you use this picture? Why? And you know, you could tell right away where the hate is coming from, because it's just jealousy, you know, and a person's inability to fulfill their own life. So the only way they get fulfillment is by hacking down on somebody else's life, or somebody else prevent them from getting fulfillment in life. I know I'm kind of talking in circles, but it's a really complex thing. So I found a little clip on YouTube, about 5 minutes long, and it gets into systems thinking and giving it also a good explanation. So it's important, man. You have a brain, use it. You know, that's what's going to put you ahead of the competition. And always strive to maximize every little thing that you have for its utility. You know, don't throw away the baby with the bathwater, as they say. So I want to thank you for listening. Praise Yeshua HaMashiach, the Merciful's name, Jesus Christ's name. And yeah, now I'm going to play this clip on systems thinking, and I want to thank you for listening.
In this video, we will be giving an overview to the area of complexity theory by looking at the major theoretical frameworks that are considered to form part of it and contribute to the study of complex systems. Complexity theory is a set of theoretical frameworks used for modeling and analyzing complex systems within a variety of domains. Complexity has proven to be a fundamental feature of our universe that is not amenable to our traditional methods of modern science. And thus, as researchers have encountered it within many different areas from computer science to ecology to engineering, they have had to develop new sets of models and methods for approaching it. Out of these different frameworks has emerged a core set of commonalities that over the past few decades has come to be recognized as a generic framework for studying complex systems in the abstract. Complexity theory encompasses a very broad and very diverse set of models and methods. As yet, there is no proper formulation to structure and give definition to this framework. Thus, we will present it as a composite of our four main areas that encompass the different major perspectives on complex systems and how to best interpret them, including self-organization theory, nonlinear systems, network theory, and adaptive systems theory. Firstly, self-organization and emergence. Complex systems are composed of many small parts without centralized control, examples being flocks of birds, financial markets, social networks, global logistics networks, or the human brain. Without centralized control, global organization is an emergent feature of the local interactions between the parts. Whereas the term emergence is a general concept referring to how new levels of organization are formed as we put component parts together, the theory of self-organization presents a number of concrete models for understanding how this process takes place. The model of self-organization draws upon information theory to understand organization in terms of information and entropy. It draws upon ideas in physics surrounding synchronization and pattern formation, and ideas in chemistry surrounding dissipative systems and far-from-equilibrium processes. Here we are looking at how elements governed by simple rules synchronize their behavior, with the result being a process of self-organization as patterns of organization emerge from the bottom up. Researchers try to model complex systems by capturing these local rules and using computational tools like agent-based modeling to try and simulate the process through which order emerges out of initially homogeneous or disordered states. Next, nonlinear systems and chaos theory. Nonlinearity is an inherent feature and major theme that crosses all areas of complex systems. A lot of nonlinear systems theory has its origins in quite dense and obscure mathematics and physics. Out of the study of certain types of equations, weather patterns, fluid dynamics, and particular chemical reactions has emerged some very counterintuitive phenomena in the form of the butterfly effect and chaos. Chaos theory, which is the study of nonlinear dynamical systems, was one of the first major challenges to the Newtonian paradigm that was accepted into the mainstream body of scientific knowledge. Our modern scientific framework is based upon linear systems theory, and this places significant constraints upon it. Linear systems theory is dependent upon the concept of a system having an equilibrium. Although linear systems theory often works as an approximation, the fact is that many of the phenomena we are interested in describing are nonlinear. Processes of change, such as regime shifts within ecosystems and society, happen far from equilibrium. They are governed by the dynamics of feedback loops and not linear equations. Trying to model complex systems by using traditional linear systems theory is like trying to put a screw into a piece of wood with a hammer. We are simply using the wrong tool because it is the only one we have. Thus, the areas of nonlinear systems and their dynamics is another major part of the framework of complexity theory that has come largely from physics, mathematics, and the study of far-from-equilibrium processes in chemistry. Next, network theory. Network theory is another major area to complexity theory, as almost all complex systems can be understood and modeled effectively as networks. Network theory is a formal mathematical language, but it has proven a very practical tool for analysis and thus has found widespread application in many areas. The study of networks is probably the youngest and most active area of complexity science, again driven by the rise of computation and the fundamental role that networks are starting to play in our world with the advent of information technology. With the theory of networks and the availability of new sources of data, we are starting to get a real picture to what some of these complex systems that make up our world actually look like. We can start to see the connections within financial systems through which contagion spreads, the real-time movement of freight around the globe, or socio-political networks that influence our lives. This is a new kind of science, driven less by models and equations, but more by real-time, dense data sets. This means we are no longer left staring at models, but now have accessible visualizations to give us a much more rich, intuitive, and in many ways, real sense for what exactly these complex systems are like. The main contributions to this area have come from the area of mathematics called graph theory, and again, computer science. The last major area to complexity theory that we will discuss is that of complex adaptive systems. Complex adaptive systems are classical examples of complex systems, and people often use the two words somewhat interchangeably. They consist of many parts acting and reacting to each other's behavior, like a school of fish swimming together, nation-states within the international political environment, or businesses in a market. They are highly dynamic and develop through an evolutionary-like process. The central issue is that of the process of adaptation and evolution. The idea of adaptation formed a central part of cybernetics that contributed ideas surrounding control systems and how systems regulate themselves and their environment in order to maintain homeostasis. A key issue here is that of the dynamics surrounding cooperation and competition that form as adaptive agents interact and try to pursue their goals collectively. One could also include game theory here, a branch of mathematics for modeling the interaction between adaptive agents of all kinds and the dynamics of cooperation and competition that form out of this. When the idea of adaptation is generalized to a whole population of agents and takes place over a series of life cycles, it can be termed evolution. And the theory of evolution is one of the major contributions that ecology has made to complexity theory. We now have a number of different models for understanding evolution, including evolutionary game theory, replicator equations, fitness landscapes, and genetic algorithms, among others. This is an area that has grown out of cybernetics, computer science, economics, and ecology. Lastly, we'll discuss a little of the context and significance of the area of complexity theory as it plays a somewhat unique role within the framework of contemporary science. The website Scholarpedia describes complexity theory as an emerging post-Newtonian paradigm. There is a lot packed into this short statement, so let's try and unravel and make sense of it. The Newtonian framework is based on linear systems theory. This has been a powerful tool for helping us understand the world, through the contributions of millions of researchers over the course of centuries, we have built up a large and sophisticated body of scientific knowledge, which is one of humanity's greatest achievements. Throughout the 20th century, though, the Newtonian paradigm and linear systems theory have become increasingly called into question as general relativity and then chaos theory proved some of its most basic assumptions to be, in fact, flawed. The fact is that much of the phenomena that we are really interested in are inherently nonlinear, such as almost all socio-political, ecological, and economic phenomena. A core challenge of 21st century science, then, is to extend this framework into the world of nonlinear systems and complexity, and this means going beyond the Newtonian framework. As Scholarpedia puts it, developing a post-Newtonian paradigm, and this is exactly what complexity theory is doing. To summarize, we have been giving a quick overview to the area of complexity theory, which we defined as a set of theoretical frameworks used for modeling complex systems within a variety of domains. We looked at four of the major modeling frameworks that fall under its canopy. We firstly talked about self-organization and how it gives us the tools to understand the process of emergence where global patterns form out of only local interactions. We talked about the theory of nonlinear systems and how it has emerged out of the study of chaotic physical and chemical processes. We then discussed network theory as another major domain that understands complex systems in terms of connectivity and how things flow through these systems. The last major area we looked at was the theory of adaptive systems that tries to understand complex adaptive systems in terms of the interaction between adaptive agents, cooperation and competition, and the dynamics of evolution. Finally, we tried to provide some insight into the significance and context of complexity theory as a so-called post-Newtonian paradigm as it tries to extend our scientific body of knowledge into the world of nonlinear systems.
Welcome to the Alpha Male Buddhist from Brooklyn podcast. I'm your host, Miguel. I like to cover topics from ancient history, great leaders and generals from the past, and I also like to talk about self-realization, truth, critical thinking, and strategic spirituality. Outside the box, nonconformist. I'm here to shatter the myths of the mainstream media and the beta sheeple narrative. I do want to thank you guys for listening. Praise Yeshua HaMashiach's name. Praise Jesus Christ's name. My link tree is Alpha Male Buddhist Pod. Links are in the show note descriptions of this episode below. There in my link tree, you will find links to my Instagram, Telegram, Rumble, Odyssey, Twitter, and my free episode archives. If you're a new listener, I have also included links to my top-rated episodes. These are specific episodes of the podcast that are the most popular and listeners have given me the most positive feedback on. Some of these episodes are also in video format, so you can not only listen to the episode, but you can watch the accompanying video to that episode. Also, contact me for my free Academy of Liberation handbook, which is in PDF format, along with a free audiobook version of the handbook. So check out the show notes below of this episode for all of my content links.